Not a Great Guy brings you
Phoenix City.
Phoenix City. I'm Frosty. I'm joined here by Dave.
Hello.
Cam.
Good evening.
And we have a special guest, Liam Hislop from, you're going to plug?
Stuff. I'm from Stuff. Hello. Thank you.
It's quite a creative name for a business, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. They did run out of names, didn't they?
They did. And we were just doing Stuff.
It's a very Kiwi way to name it. I mean, you know, what's that hole in the rock called? Oh, yeah, hole in the rock. What's the bay with all the islands? Bay of Islands. Yeah. What's our website? Oh, it's just some stuff.
Yeah.
There's some stuff on there. There's lots of different stuff.
So. I spent a lot of time with them when I was overseas, so I shouldn't mock it. Really.
You perfectly interrupted my nice segue from going, and we've got stuff to talk about.
Sorry.
That's what happens when you try and set yourself up.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can't rely on you bastards, can I?
If you aren't going to give us a heads up about your segues, we're going to ruin your segues. It's as simple as that.
It is tradition. Cool. So we do have some stuff to talk about. And first of all, I guess we talk about the Knicks.
Yep.
Who wants to kick off? Signings.
I'm ecstatic that Greeny has been made assistant. Obviously, there was issues around licensing qualifications, which appear to have been worked through, or that have to be, because I certainly haven't heard any word that he's managed to get himself a pro license in the last couple of months. So, I think it's a great move for not just for him but for the club, because he's such a club man. He obviously builds a fantastic rapport with the players. He knows how the club works inside and out, and I think it's the ideal kind of foil for Rodan moving into the season. Someone that knows this country's football very, very well,
and he's a good gun.
Well, yeah, there is that too.
Mm, that wraps. That always helps, doesn't it? Yeah, mm. he's gonna help build that culture, isn't he? Like, you've got the Aussie head coach now. You got a guy who wants to try and build a Kiwi culture around the place, and there's, you know, probably one guy who knows the Phoenix and Kiwi culture quite well now, even though he's an Englishman. And that's Greeny.
Well, he's a citizen now, and he has been here for 8 years, I think. And, you know, when you've got your roots like that, your daughter's been born here, you can understand why he wants to stay. So, yeah, makes perfect sense.
Mm. Absolutely.
More importantly, he was here when the Knicks were good and were tough to beat. Yeah. And that sort of thing helps a bit. And I think also that signing of Durer kind of ties in with that nicely. You've got two old heads who remember the times when we were successful and can maybe push that on to some of the younger generation. Speaking of people that might be able to push onto the new generation, another signing. I don't know how to say his last name.
Gothard?
Yeah, former All Whites goalkeeping coach. Literally know nothing about the guy. Liam, you were there for the presser. You might be able to fill us in a bit better.
No, there wasn't a lot about him.
Damn.
Spoken, to be honest. But seems like a good goalkeeping coach. He did 17s and 20s for a while, and he was All Whites goalkeeping coach. He comes from England. I've seen him around, you know, All Whites camps, and seems like a nice chap. And you know, there aren't exactly many goalkeeping coaches kicking around who know Kiwi goalkeepers. So,
no, that is fair. You probably have to go back to Dez.
Yeah. And today they said they want to get another goalkeeper in. So Mark Rudan. He said Rudan or Rudan, either way you would pronounce
it. I'm not going to try and pronounce it the way Lucy Zelich did.
How did she say?
Marco Rudan.
So, yeah, they said they need another experienced goalkeeper. He said Ollie Sale and Keegan Smith are not ready for a 27-game A-League season. So that tells you what he thinks about those two.
Does anyone disagree with that?
No. I think they're both good options for the future, but they're not ready to be the number one.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. I guess the question is what that means for Tando. I mean, he'd talked up staying here to do his rehab and hoping to hold on to a spot here. Whether that's a signal that that's not going as well as they hoped, or whether it's not a signal about that at all, he's still in the mix, he's still here, and he might be the goalkeeper they pick up.
Yeah.
I think it's more that.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be, obviously he's off contract, so I'd say if he's doing his rehab, Rudan's going to look at him. At least take a look. look at him because he's here in rehab.
But that'll be the question, is if he's still doing his rehab here. I know they said that, and I know Tando said that a while ago, but maybe something's changed in the interim. Who knows?
Yeah, fair.
I haven't seen confirmation he's still around. But
yeah. No, neither have I, actually. Yeah.
Having done my Achilles, that is not an injury you take lightly, and especially for a keeper. That's a hell of a thing to come back from. So
I do remember you on crutches for a very long period of time.
It was not tremendously fun.
No.
Easiest way to figure it out is just someone go down on Monday and have a look. Because that came up today. I was like, hey, if anyone wants to know who's on trial or who's here, just come on down on Monday.
Yeah. So which of us is working in an office on Monday, and which of us has the right to go and watch Nick's training on Monday?
Hey, come on, guys. Yeah, it wasn't an open invitation, but it was anyone, if you come on down, say hi. Just don't come through the barricades. Exactly. These are like words. He's just like, anyone can come down that wants to.
It was nice to hear how kind of open he was with stuff. It was a good wee bit of audio. I listened to it just this afternoon. And he came across as likable as he did in that first press conference. He knows his shit, but he also is just really likable and down to earth, which was nice. He ripped on you a little bit, which
was good.
Good
banter. I like a good bit of banter.
Yep.
Yeah.
We might link that audio.
You hear what some people are about. You hear, good, bad, and otherwise. You know, I make my own decisions and make my own mind up as well. I mean, they told me you're a great guy. I don't see that. It just depends on how you view things, right? So.
He wins points with the owner as well.
Well, exactly. He's made me laugh, and I quite endear to people who take the piss out of me. And my infielder will be happy as well.
I think it's a good way of building that relationship with all of the press. I mean, you're not going to take offence at that. The other guys are going to laugh and go, "Oh, good. This is how this is going to be. It's going to be filled with banter. These presses. So that's good.
Considering how he was on the weekend, I think that's probably positive at this stage.
And I know a lot of people talked about them wanting to be more proactive with the media and proactive people, and they've started doing that as well. So they're keen to meet up with people like myself and with Pliny to discuss what they want to do with the future of the club. This is Mark, I should say, not Rob, as we can probably guess. But no, and I'm happy to do that, and I'm happy to give people the benefit of the doubt. I did that even with Dahlia up until about December last year, and then it all started to unravel. So
I think it's a good thing overall. I don't think Rob necessarily has to be available all the time. I think there are issues he probably should front, but day to day, Mark's the guy you want to be dealing with as the media, and if he's open to it and seems as good at dealing with you guys as he seems so far, then great. Hopefully that builds some bridges and we can get that relationship working from both sides. It'd be great.
What did you cover off today?
I kind of wanted him to say something about Andreas Harrah, but he didn't. So that was fine. He stayed clear of that. I just covered off where they're at and what he's doing, what he's trying to plan, who he's trying to sign, where he's trying to go. So we went around, if he'd watched the All Whites, he was impressed by some players, and they've got some players in from that squad that aren't in the Phoenix right now.
That's a good place to actually chat.
Yeah.
Who, apart from Gully, because we all agree that Gully should be trialling with the Knicks, who else do you think he's going to get in after those performances in India?
Two midfielders, I reckon. Yep. I mean, Tim Payne is going to be down here on Monday for training. I'd hope Cameron Howson is, provided he wants to come down to our fair city.
Well, he was the only one that was on the field for all 90 minutes. I hesitate to use the term play because he was absent for long periods, in my personal opinion, in those games. Yeah. But he has been a standout in the ISB Hand Premiership all season, so you can understand why he'd be given that opportunity.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind to see Andre De Jong down as well.
Yeah, I was about to say. He's a guy that seems to take his chances really well, and that's something that I think can play pretty well in the A-League, because you know that defenders are going to give you chances, and if you can take them, you'll be pretty potent.
And he does offer something completely different to what we have currently up top, obviously, with the two small, pacey strikers, wide strikers.
He's a nine.
Yeah, and which I hesitate to say this, the Watson mould, but it is that same kind of alternate option.
You take that back. on behalf of Patrick, you take that back. No, I think he's more the Harry Kane nine than the Niall Quinn nine. So
fair.
Moses Dyer, anyone?
No. One good game doesn't undo all of the bad games.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say that maybe the All Whites was a step above his grade, at least at the time, if not actually in total. But is the A-League going to be a step too much for him?
Do you think the A-League is, like, take those games that the All Whites played in India, is that a step above the A-League?
I question whether they were.
I don't think they were.
No.
So I think he's playing at that level, and he's shone for 20 minutes in one particular game. I think it's a step up again to go to the A-League, and when he's been playing the games let's take the Intercontinental playoff as the example of a team. That's well above his ability. Perhaps playing the Island teams is about where it's at. And again, but again, I think the A-League's above that in standard anyway.
I think the only player we've got is a common benchmark for the Indian Games and for the A-League is obviously Sabri Singh, who stood out.
Very much so. Very much
but
so.
But had some good moments and good games for the A-League. He wasn't head and shoulders above everyone
that's
else.
That's fair.
So that's probably fair. I did want to give Moses Dyer another chance, seeing as he's quite young.
Well, I think the thing with him is there's every chance he might reach that level. I don't think he's there yet. I think we don't see him standing out in Premiership games, for example, where when Sarpreet's played at that level, he does look the standout within his own team.
Totally.
And Dyer just doesn't. He looks adequate for that level at times, and other times he looks a bit poor, but he certainly isn't a standout at that level. So I just don't see him being A-League quality yet if you use someone like Singh as the yardstick for that, who we all agree is ready for A-League football. Dyer might get there. He's not there yet.
Hmm. Anyone else that we think? So De Jong was added to the list.
John Gully Payne-Howson, that's what we've got so far.
Yeah, I think everyone's pretty agreed on that, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I want to see those guys there at least.
Do we think they're all going to come from that all-white squad? Do we think those trialists are all coming from that point?
I would love to see Clayton Lewis getting some kind of loan deal because he's getting no minutes.
Yeah.
And he needs to be playing, and he's proven for the all-whites that he's capable of stepping up to a much higher level than, well, not that he's playing at the moment because he's sitting on the bench.
Yeah. Mm.
But he deserves to be playing professional football at the very least.
I think he'd be one worth having a look, but it'll be entirely down to him because I think for a lot of those guys who go overseas, it can be definitely seen as failure coming back to New Zealand in general. Even if the A-League would be probably a step up from what he's not currently playing, it's still viewed as giving up on that dream of Europe, which it's a tough one to get over. So if he's open to it, maybe, but I think it'll entirely lie in his camp whether or not they're seeking that. I don't know the Phoenix will go out of their way to try and entice him back.
It's a shame because I look at two guys who have made that break to Europe and then come back, Moy and Rojas,
yep,
who have then broken back into it.
Yep.
Moy's gone on and done amazing things for Huddersfield. And obviously Rojas is at Heerenveen.
Yep.
He's certainly getting more minutes than he was doing over
Stuttgart.
In Switzerland.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, in Stuttgart he didn't get any.
Yep.
I think with Rojas, the thing is he went over too early. And I think that's a mistake lots of players have made.
I also think he went to the wrong place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite Stuttgart possibly,
is,
but
it is a tough place to go to.
Yeah, and it's the league. Bundesliga is, whilst it's technically much higher than the A-League, obviously, the A-League is quite competitive. Bundesliga is still quite competitive, but I just don't think he had the right size and, you know, strength to be there. Whereas if he goes into a more technical league, he's gonna do a lot better just because the type of player he is.
Yeah, I think that the way the German you don't see small German players or small players in the Bundesliga. The exception would be someone like Shaqiri.
Yes,
and
he's a stocky little boy. That one, yeah. No, I think, see, I look at someone like, we talk about signing a goalkeeper, someone like Scotty Basile, I think deserves an opportunity to be taken a look at. I personally think Scott Hillier is a defender that could be looked at as well.
Stop kicking in his own goal.
Yeah, he's only done that once.
Has he?
I think I can't justify that point, actually, now that I think back of it, so I take that back. But I still think someone like him, even though he wasn't in that all-white selection, deserves to be had a look at just because of the season that he's actually had. So,
at the Phoenix.
Yeah, I think he should. It's a trial. No harm for a trial.
Yeah, okay, if he's in the city.
I think
also in the city and also a central defender, though.
Yeah,
yes, but there's definitely a golfing quality between Hillier and his lot. I don't need to.
I'm willing to back that too, as well. Sorry.
No, I think the only thing going in someone like Hillier's favour is that he's in Wellington, so it costs you nothing to have him along to the session. But I agree. I think there are some of those guys who are definitely decent players, very good players, in fact, in the Premiership, but they're probably not A-League quality, and you kind of know that without needing to get them along to a session. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't. I mean, we have seen a lot more of Hillier than Rudan will have, so maybe he does want to have a look at some of those guys who are local, and it's certainly a lower barrier of entry since they're already here.
Well, for a start, you need opposition, and you've only got 11 players signed, so someone's got to turn up as well.
Yep.
That's true.
Quality coaching material, me.
Well, there's 12.
Well, yeah, there was some contention about that this afternoon. It sounds like the one who's not in the 11 he talked about today is Keegan Smith, yeah. Who's not currently at the club because he's been released for winter football, but is yeah. still contracted for next season regardless. So I would have thought you'd have to count him. I don't know exactly how that works.
I thought that would be a complete nulling the contract like they did with yeah. McGarry, and then
on the promise of
another one for the next season, it'll be a new contract to the same end length as the previous.
He was on a youth contract though, right? And I believe they signed a pro contract starting from a different date, so I believe that'll be dated later.
It was like a 1+1 or a 2 year
yeah. thing. So you can have a gap between where those two contracts start and end, and I think that's where this winter season
will fit. They're right. So he's not contracted at the moment. So,
but if there's pen on paper to something starting, say, 1st of August, then he kind of is. Yeah. Don't quote me on that date.
That is true.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, he's going to be at training on Monday if he's not at school, right?
Yeah. He's probably going to be at school.
Is he? I don't know how old the kid is. I thought he might have been 18 by now, but yeah, either way.
I think he is 18, but I think he's still 7th form. I think the only one under 18 is Kakache still. He's true. 17.
Yeah, he will be at school.
Right, I guess we can move on to the next thing. We did mention the All Whites. Is there anything else we want to cover with the All Whites, apart from that it was a bit of a shame they came home early, because seeing as they gave a nice wee dealing to India?
My personal opinion is that they were the best team in the tournament. But they were also incredibly wasteful in front of goal, and that was what cost them. So they should have beaten Kenya and didn't. It cost them the game, and in the end, that's the result that cost them getting through to the final. It showed against Chinese Taipei that they were so much better. Again, quite wasteful in front of goal, and then India, still wasteful in front of goal. They should have won by more.
The goals that they did score, though, the ones especially Singh was involved in, that short passing in the right on the top of the box, that was pretty.
And as you pointed out, he was the standout player in what was the best team in that tournament, in my opinion. He was just showed the quality and the footballer that he is going to turn into.
Yeah, what struck me was the fact that it was a short passing game, and that's not something I've seen from him before. We've seen his shots. He's got a good curling left on him. And long passing game is also very good, but I've never seen him in traffic hitting short passes, and that's pleasing.
Yeah.
Did anyone else think that some of the games of that tournament were fixed?
Fixed? No.
Okay, I'll just go throw that out there.
I honestly thought that some of the players were garbage, but...
Where it was located and...
It was a strange wee tournament all up.
Yeah. And, you're trying to prepare for the Asian Cup, which is, what, next year? So it's like...
Quite a way away.
Yeah. I don't know. I had concerns about, and especially the last scoreline in the group stage, which was nil all at halftime, and all of a sudden it was 4-0.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I hadn't really thought about it. I thought it was a strange wee tournament. Yeah, and
I'm a naturally cynical person, so I just look at it, and then because the Al Jazeera investigation came out just before that, and they said that football tournaments in that part of the world had been fixed quite a lot. So I just, and then some of the results that came out, like that Chinese Taipei team, which turned up against the All Whites, was a vastly improved team that lost 5-0 to the hosts. Was that a gift they'd given them? Yeah, thank you for inviting us. Here's a 5-0 victory for you. I don't know.
Anyway. Oh, you are a cynical.
I am. Yeah. Sure am.
We love cynics around here. You're talking about. You're cynical at the best of times, Frosty.
I know, but you're taking my gig, Liam.
I have no doubt that our games were legit.
Absolutely. That's,
100% legit. Yeah. Going off the performances I've seen from the size that we're playing and how we put in. I'm a very optimistic person by nature, as everyone will attest to. So perhaps to naive levels of optimism. So yeah, I'm going to say no, I don't think so.
So shall I pull the pin on the cynical hand grenade now then?
Yeah.
talk about the turn.
Well, we could briefly touch on how salty some of those Indian fans were. They've been going pretty hard in on anyone who's around New Zealand football at all. I mean, I assume you guys got some messages from some of them. I certainly did, and I certainly saw other people getting them, talking about how it was bullshit that we weren't sending a full strength squad and we were going to be dealt to by India, and they were really laying in hard, and then it went deathly quiet after that game, which was great.
If we had a full strength team out there, my God, we'd have absolutely slaughtered them.
The level of football that was getting played at that tournament.
Well, depending on which way the fix went.
Fair enough. It just belie the rankings, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does belie the rankings, doesn't it? When we were the lowest ranked, effectively worst team, we've sent out what can be only described as our B squad, and we have I'm being generous. And we have been the best team by far.
Kenya were missing a running armour, though.
To be fair, Kenya took an understrength side to that tournament as well. But, yeah,
I mean, it shows the benefits of playing regular football against other nations during those friendlies. It just boosts your rating regardless of whether or not you're winning or losing. Those regular games help such a big amount, and we just don't play them.
Yep.
So
getting involved in more tournaments like this, I think, is the way to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Playing a lot of those teams around the 80th to 120th ranking, where we tend to hang, is the best way for us.
But in a situation like this where we've sent all of like a very young squad there, that's great for them. You know, this isn't a tournament where we need to be bringing Chris Wood along and you know, those sort of guys. It doesn't make sense. So it gives you a chance to play some of those other guys, give them caps, give them time at a level that they're not normally playing. It's good all round.
Mm. So sorry for ruining your harass segues. Do you want to try that again?
No. Done. Ruining all my segues. Okay,
I just don't think he's up to the quality required for hosting.
I think you're probably right. Okay, let's talk about the Ferns, seeing as I'm getting thrown under the bus as well.
Should we do the game first? Should we actually talk about the game first?
Oh, yes, we can talk about the game.
Yeah.
Do we have to talk about the game?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we should.
Did anyone see any redeeming features in that game? Liam.
Talking Liam, about throwing under the bus.
Describe the game as excrement.
No, there were redeeming features. There were an exquisite display of birds flying around.
Yellowhammers, exactly.
I thought they were sparrows, but I was miles away. And not miles, I was 100 metres up in the bloody press box. So I enjoyed watching them fly around in the second half. Anyone else?
I thought the effort that was put in by the football fans was 100%. And some of the football that was played by the Japanese team, that they almost scored with that series of volleys into the box. Oh,
beautiful.
That was...
Yeah. Missed the open goal at the end of it, though, didn't they? They probably should have put that away.
Yes, but when you've just basically been playing short passing off the chest and off the head, it's all right.
Mm. Yeah. They were good. The Japanese were very good to watch. They were allowed to be very good to watch. It's, you know, under absolutely no pressure, you should be able to pick a pass if you're an international footballer.
Yes, and they were under absolutely no pressure. Yep. I don't see too many redeeming features. Actually, that's not true. I think it's fantastic that they got the biggest crowd they've ever received to a women's football match in New Zealand. That is brilliant. Shows that there is actually the underlying level of support here for them. It's a real shame that the product that was on display, through no fault of the players that were out there, wasn't something that will drag those people back in again. Mm. Because the players on the field are better than what we threw out. It's kind of weird. I have no issue with the fact that we've set up to play a defensive style of football. None whatsoever, because we are playing a team that is better than us. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. What I do have a problem with is looking for touch when you get the ball constantly. Nothing wrong with having a welly upfield if you're under pressure. Again, we've done all done that at every level of football we play. But you're basically, every time you get the ball, you're just giving it back to the opposition every single time. I think, was it? First half we had 23% possession, something like that. Something.
This is our section on redeeming features, Cam.
It only got to 27%. In the words of a respected football journalist, who's not myself, those tactics.
You said respected, so
yeah. Exactly. Those tactics were a disgrace.
Yes.
No. Yes. Absolute disgrace.
Absolutely.
And what was the point? You were going out there to practice your defending? Is that what they were doing?
It certainly felt like it, didn't it?
Yeah. For 90 minutes, we're just going to figure out how to defend.
Yeah.
Well, they certainly didn't look like they had figured it out beforehand. It looked like they were trialing a new thing. It didn't look like this is what we've been working on in training for months. This is how we're used to playing. It looked like
a
training session. But you've got over a top 10 team in the world to have a training session against them. It doesn't make any sense.
And especially when you're missing two of your centre backs. And you're going to play five across the back.
So I actually think that's where that made sense, because two of your starting centre backs were not available. So we're going to improve the defensive structure because we are without our best players. So I can kind of understand that. It's just that you got the ball, do something with it. Try and do something with it. At least recycle possession.
I still don't even understand that, because you've got the biggest moment for the football fans in their history, with the biggest ever crowd there, and you're just going to go out there and defend. And even with a back five or a back four or whatever you want to do, you've still got to be able to play, right?
That's it for me. They weren't given the freedom to play how they know they can.
Yeah. Like a back five could have been some wing backs who are going to push forward. It doesn't have to be really negative like what we saw. Yeah. You know, the formation in itself isn't necessarily the problem here.
And if you've got a back five, you can press as well. If you've got four players in front of them and one in front of them, you can press people. They pressed for, I reckon, 10 seconds in the second half. Had Japan under pressure, and they were looking like, what are we going to do now? And like just panicking. And then all of a sudden, I was talking to my colleague Philip Rollo, who's on the sideline. Gareth Turnbull yells out, drop back, drop back. The ball's still in their own box. Yep. It's still in Japan's box. And you're telling your players to drop back to behind halfway. It's like kids' football when they let them kick it out of their own box. It's like everyone drop back behind halfway, let them play out. And that's fine because it's kids' football and kids need to learn how to play out of the back. We're not letting Japan play out of the back.
No.
We shouldn't let them.
Yeah. No. CJ Bott, I've watched CJ Bott play football for years from when she was at Waterside Quarry. That woman can run up and down that line all day. She's got fitness coming out of her ass, and she is a good, good footballer. And she's completely hamstrung by the fact that she couldn't push forward. She couldn't put pressure on. She's under pressure all the time because the ball is always coming down that wing, and defensive. There was no outlet. This is the right football. There's no outlet. They couldn't do, or weren't, I say couldn't do, they weren't allowed to do what they know they can do.
Well, if you saw who she had in front of her,
Anna Wilkinson.
Yeah, but she's put out wide on the right, and it's kind of like she looked like a fish out of water. She was running around
She's basically playing as a second right back.
The whole game.
And the thing with Bott is you could see it by the time the last 5 or 10 minutes when she was on the field. Did she get subbed off at the end? I can't remember. But she was just starting to chop people. It's just like she was so frustrated. It's like, that's it. You guys are getting it now. And that's what I would have done as well. Yep. If I had to play that for 70 minutes, I would have gone, right, someone's going to get smacked now.
Yeah. you're as a central defender or a back, you're almost forced to do that because it's like, these guys are going to be running at me all day and I need to get in their head. I need to just chop one and get them thinking, oh, shit, I better not run at him again. He'll have me. Mm. I'll go somewhere else and make them go to plan B at least. But, Jesus, that was... weak.
So we all agree that it wasn't the best performance that we've seen from a New Zealand football side.
It was the worst performance I've seen from a New Zealand football side.
Yep. What about Harath?
I'm going to say one more thing before we move on to him and say that there is one redeeming thing out of this, and it's if you're talking about the crowd and how it was the biggest crowd and that was great, a lot of that crowd was really young and actually still had a good time despite that. They are completely oblivious to the tactics. I think a loss was always going to be disappointing for a lot of those young kids, but after the game I still saw 5 and 6 year olds running around stoked that they had met Sarah Gregorius, and stuff like that is still going to come out of this regardless of how bad the football was, which obviously was horrendous for all the parents who'd brought those kids along. But I don't think the kind of redeeming stuff around the, them having their role models there and actually playing in Wellington, all that kind of stuff was burned by how negative that football was. They would have enjoyed it more if we'd won, for sure, but I don't know that any of us would have said coming into this game that we were likely to win.
I mean, yes and no in that regard, though, because you hear other anecdotal evidence of there was a former football fan, I can't remember her name, on TV1 saying when she was walking
Candy
out of the
Duncan?
Ground. No, it was one of the other. It was another one. When she was walking out of the ground, she heard a kid saying, "I was so bored at that game. That was so boring. Can't never go again." And there's other anecdotal evidence that I've been told from kids who have gone, well, at least at least it was fun to watch Japan. And that's the feeling they're going to have about the football fans, because they'll never play.
I think it's going to depend entirely on the ages of those kids as to how aware they were of various things. Because
they play football as well.
Absolutely. So I think despite that, there will be some goodwill about just having the game here at all. That won't be burned by that, but it could have been a lot more.
It very much could have been, and it's fantastic that they came down here. Brilliant that we got to see them play.
Yeah.
First time in, was it, a quarter of a century that actually played down here. They had a full-strength team. Every player had come back that was still available to play for the Ferns. Obviously, there was a couple that couldn't through injury. But,
and they retired.
And, as I said, available to play for the Ferns. I'm assuming we'll cover that off shortly.
Yeah.
But they had every star name. They had every person you can imagine, that like Rosie White, who's Liverpool player, and all the girls playing in the NWSL, and all these names that
the German women's Bundesliga as well.
Exactly.
Four or five players in there.
And they are all there.
Sweden's top division, but they're playing in top leagues in the world.
Exactly. They did everything right outside of what was on the pitch.
Yeah.
They did like the appearances out at in Porirua and McDonald's or whatever it was out there. It's like that kind of stuff, the open training sessions, that kind of stuff is brilliantly handled.
Yeah.
Done very, very well. It was just what happened at the end that ruined all of that.
Yeah. So I guess we talk about the press conference afterwards now. It is fair to say that there was a little bit of anger and hostility. I'm not going to throw you under the bus, Liam. Mr. Pine especially took umbrage at what was put in front of him, and I believe that, Liam, you voiced some concern about
Yeah.
It was a
good two-man play from myself and Jason.
Yes, it was. It was quite an interesting line of questioning.
So, yeah, I mean, we kicked it off and there was a talk about tactics and how they'd played, which was started, and he explained it. And as part of the explanation, he basically said, I came to New Zealand, it was all a pile of shit, so we're not going to play football. Which kind of got, like, exactly. Which I had a list of questions, and none of the questions I was going to ask was the one that I actually asked, which was, well, isn't that a negative mindset to start your tenure from in New Zealand? To which he was confused, and I asked it again, and he was confused again, and I asked it again. At which point he said, what would you prefer we do? I said, well, play some football. And he said, well, and lose 8-0. And I just sort of went, where are we going with this?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, when have they lost 8-0? And he said, no. And, well, no, but, you know, this wasn't a negative mentality. It was a smart mentality. And that's when Piney kicked off, because I could hear him staring behind me. Mm-hmm. And he took it over from there.
Yeah. So just as a bit of history, I think, what is it? How many times have we played Japan in the last 94?
Like 7 or 8 times or something. And we've never lost by more
than
a goal.
Two draws and... the rest have been
one goal losses at the most. Yep.
So we've shown that we can foot it with them at the very least on the scoreboard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And all of those games have been away. They haven't been in New Zealand.
No.
So we've never played in front of a home crowd, played against Japan, and we've always been competitive against them. So probably fair that Mr. Pine and Mr. Hislop go to town. So 8-0, he's just decided that that was going to be the outcome. Do we think that there's any realistic
view?
No. It's a strange one, because I think if you had asked all of us sitting around the table before the game if we thought we were going to win this game, I don't think we would have been giving us great odds.
I'm on the record, I think, is saying we were going to lose 4-0.
Yeah, and so I don't think any of us were giving us a huge chance here. But the thing is, our only chance of winning that game is to actually go out there and try and win it. We certainly don't win it by trying to park the bus, and I don't even think we are a chance to scrape a draw if we try and park the bus and actually knew how to do it. Trying to do it when we don't know how is doomed to failure. But I don't think his mindset of going in saying we're the underdog here is actually wrong. It's where he thinks it's impossible to get anything out of that. I mean, underdogs are what New Zealand are in everything, and we still do pretty bloody well. So to come into New Zealand and claim that being the underdog means we're just doomed to be shit forever, so deal with it, it has rightfully rubbed everyone the wrong way.
I did see a very interesting tweet that someone suggested, I wish I could remember who, that coaches coming into New Zealand should have a stand down period like players going to play for New Zealand, so that they can learn the mentality and the mindset that
the psyche,
Kiwi has.
Yeah. Kiwi psyche of backs against the walls, you will do your best and you'll fight the whole way through. You don't give up from the first fucking whistle, which is what that was.
They retreated from the first whistle.
Yeah.
They went back.
Long ball and then.
Long ball and stood there and then watched. And it was. There were two reasons why we were so furious after that, and it was A, the football they played, and then B, Haraf's attitude.
That's the thing that wound me up.
Grin and the way he was looking at us like, who are you to question me? And okay, fair enough, you're a professional coach and I'm a journalist. Sure, I can understand that in a way. But Jason Pine, I mean, because I'm obviously not a respected journalist. Jason Pine
is very respected.
And he obviously doesn't know that. Because he's been, you know, how long has Piney covered football in this country for? 15 years, 20 years, 60 years.
How old's Piney that long?
How old is Piney? I don't know. He's probably going to, 60 years might be a bit much. But if you're going to go there and then when he's questioning you, and Piney was fair to start with, and then it got more heated as it went on, and it was still fair, absolutely fair, but it just got more confrontational. If you're just going to sit there and look at him like, who are you, mate? And like, I'm right, you're wrong. 5-4-1's the way. And the most concerning part is that he controls all of football in New Zealand.
Yeah. And that's the point that I think Piney made when I was talking to him, is that he's in charge of all of football in this country. Mm. Now, the performance of the All Whites that they put out, they weren't those kind of performances. Those weren't those kind of tactics. But you could lump our team in the same category as he's just lumped the Football Ferns, who are a better side in the scope of women's football. That Ferns side is really, really good.
Mm.
You know, you don't get in the top 20 in the world without having some kind of talent. So the fact that he's lumped them in there, but the All Whites.
And then he comes back on Tuesday and he starts to try and wind it back a little and say, I didn't mean we didn't have the quality to compete. I mean, the quality to compete technically with people. Yeah. So technically we can't compete with them, but hey, if we just like sit back and lump the absolute shit out of it, yeah, maybe we'll beat some people. Because he said, well, you know, I don't think we can't beat people, I just don't think we can compete with them technically. That's your fucking job, mate.
Yeah.
Your job is to come here and fucking get us to play that way.
Yep.
All right. I can't do that for you. You know, you can't. So instead of, you're the technical director and you're supposed to develop a long-term vision for how to improve football here in this country and training from all the way through. You're in charge of national curriculum. You're in charge of everything, right? You're in charge of the whole of football plan and delivering that, which is not. So you're going to come in here and say, instead of actually, you know, improving the technical ability of our players, I'm just going to set all of our teams up, 17s and 20s included, which is anecdotally coming back from people that they're not allowed to play football now. And you're not going to help improve them. You're just going to tell them, actually, we're just going to develop this style of play and we're not going to develop you technically. Like, there's been anecdotal evidence coming back from 17s women's camps where the centre backs can't pass to the midfielders during training.
Yeah.
How do you develop as a footballer under those circumstances? No. How does a midfielder develop as a footballer if they never receive a pass from a centre back?
To me, I find this stunning. You know, being a German fan, it's like 50% of your passes in the game by the whole team will be between the centre back and the defensive midfield. It's just like a little bit of ping pong in there just to work someone out.
You're trying to draw people out. You're trying to, you know. And
if you're playing possession based football, that's your holy triangle right there. Ooh, that irritates me.
The other thing is, I've heard of one player who came back from that women's 17s camp and said, I almost never want to play football again after that, and I never want to play for New Zealand if we're going to play like that.
Yeah. Well, it's terrible on all fronts, because not only was that him trying to, you know, pedal back his comments from after the game, you know, he contradicted himself massively in there. He said, I don't think we can win, but I didn't mean we can't win, but he specifically said, I don't think we can win in the post-match. And, you know, lots of the stuff was just completely at odds with what he had said earlier. So his claim of a misunderstanding was bullshit to begin with. But that's ruining the kind of mentality of the players, but it's also going to kill the fans. I mean, no one wants to watch that shit for the next however many years. If this is the long-term vision, is to play this style of football that no one wants to play, no one wants to watch, and isn't going to win us shit anyway, what's the fucking point? Let's just give up now. I mean, what an embarrassment if that's the long-term vision of New Zealand football, is to get us just to try and play out for nil all draws. That's not a vision of anything.
What I found interesting was someone pointed, I think it was Rollo that pointed out that he was in charge of the Austrian under-20 side when they came here.
Yep.
And I remember Cam and I, we sat and watched the Argentina-Austria game.
Yep.
And it was horrible.
Absolutely.
The only thing that was redeeming about it is the Argentinians couldn't finish a bowl of cereal at the time.
And was it them, the Austrians, that had that really creative set piece?
Where they had a guy kneel down in front of the wall, and I think they drilled it straight to his head.
Yeah.
It was just... And you're just like watching it going, these guys are trying to organise themselves on the field, and like, oh, you go there, there's all these guys kind of pointing, going, well, we've been sortless in camp. You stand, right, okay. And then what? Oh, yeah. And they obviously just didn't know quite what was going on.
Yeah, well, and part of that as well is he talked in his, was it Tuesday when he made his second lot of comments, where he talked about how, you know, this, what we saw on Sunday was only part of the vision. That's the first step towards what they're going to try and implement. What we saw at that under-20 World Cup was clearly a team he'd prepared for a World Cup. That was the finished product of it. I don't know that it was any different. I mean, if in his mind it's different somehow, it's not notable to anyone outside. It's still the same negative football that we saw on Sunday, just with the team knowing what they're doing rather than trying it for the first time against the top 10 side.
It did look like it was a 5-4-1 as well. I do remember there being just a lone striker sitting way deep.
And if you look at the stats from those games and compare them with the Ferns games, they're almost identical. 21 shots to 4, 75% possession, 25% possession. And then you go, okay, so we saw that. You two saw it with your own eyes. I don't know if I was at that game. So everyone in New Zealand saw that, and we've still hired him.
Yeah.
That was the vision he was delivering to Austria, and that's the vision he's delivering here. So can we blame him?
No. This is where I don't think it's his fault. I think he's been hired to do that job. I think the problem is higher up, and we've seen the problem for some time now. Andy Martin has been leading New Zealand football astray. It's been scary for some time, and I tweeted about this the other day, saying that, you know, it's been a bit of a propaganda machine for a while now. Through the Hudson era, we saw definitely a lot of just misinformation. I mean, they were fudging stats. Hudson was doing it in press conferences, and then New Zealand football were backing him up on it, and it was just a bizarre kind of tinkering with the truth, but you really had to be, you know, an anorak to see it at that point. I think this turnaround in the space of 2 days of, oh, I think this, oh, actually, I think the complete opposite, is just so, it's laid it so bare how much of a propaganda machine that is now, that even the most casual fan can see it, because this isn't games happening in the islands that only some people have watched and, you know, comments in a press conference compared to what actually made the Dom post or whatever. this is in Wellington, we all saw the game, we heard the press conference, and we saw the comments afterwards trying to backtrack, and we've seen the whole thing laid out. It's not you have to get up and watch the press conference in Russia or whatever, as we had to for the confeds. So I think this time even the casuals are getting on board with seeing this just isn't right. There's something wrong, and it's coming from the top.
I think Hudson has helped to tune all of our bullshit detectors.
Absolutely.
Everyone's very wary of another one of those, and it looks like we've got another one.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, because I was thinking about this earlier today, where at least, I don't know whether it's a redeeming factor or not, but at least Haraf's been honest. Hudson would go out and put out some of the worst football you've ever fucking seen and then tell us it was amazing. And we were all like, no, it wasn't. But the snippets that were making it to general Joe blogs on the street were that was an amazing football game, and they weren't watching it, so it didn't really matter. They'd see some highlights and go, I was told it was great. Mm. Haraf put out a shit show, but then told us that that's what he intended to do, essentially. Mm. And we somehow found that more grating than when it was the same rubbish, but we were told it was great. I don't know how I feel about that, but it's bizarre, right?
I hate being told they can't do something. It's like, you can't win. Fuck off.
Yeah.
But at least we want to be told we can, and Hudson told us we could.
Could, yeah, exactly.
And we played this great football, and then you just watch games and be like, that wasn't what happened. And then you go to the press conferences and he'd tell you, no, we played great football. And you're like, did I?
Yeah.
And then the press conference would finish and you're sitting there like, just confused rather than angry. Yeah. You're just like, what just happened to me?
No, whereas at least, like I say, I'm giving Haraf credit. At least he's telling us that's what he's doing. And I kind of respect that, because I think that's the job he's been hired to do.
Yeah.
I don't like that's the job he's been hired to do, but I think it's what he was told to do, and he's doing it.
Do we think that's the vision that he sold to New Zealand football?
I would think so.
Because I question whether any right-thinking person, even if they're incompetent, would go, yeah, actually, shit football is what I want to sell.
Well, he won't have said it in those words, though, but he will have said, look, we're never going to compete with the top nations in the world on a technical ability, so what we're going to do is we're going to set up and we're going to try and play for clean sheets, we're going to be fairly defensive and get them on the counter. I can see him explaining that coherently in a way that New Zealand football would go, yeah, you're right. We're not going to be Brazil or Germany, so let's be something else that might compete.
But We didn't play them on the counter. We didn't do any of that.
No, but imagine explaining the vision of it.
Yeah, okay, but we set up soundly defensively and then gave them the ball and said, come back at us again. And whilst, again, nothing wrong with playing defensive football, if you have a tactic that you think will win you the game, fantastic. But there just was none of that there.
No, none of it. I completely agree. But I think, you know, when you're selling the vision, you're always going to oversell it a little. Mm. And so I can see him going into a job interview there and having presented it in a way that they actually walked away going, yeah, this does make sense. Not executing it properly is a different thing, but selling it, I could believe.
Now, he's trying to say that it's the start of our process and we're going to get there. I could kind of buy that if that's the first time you've taken the team and you just wanted to work on the defense. This is the third window he's had with them now. I don't care if he says it's the third window he's had it. All right, that's not me. He had it on an interim basis.
The World Cup's not that far away.
Yeah, interim basis, first of all, the Spain camp, which was absolute atrocity by the sounds of it, and then this camp. So that's how far you've got with, 15 training sessions.
Yep. And how long of that was Abby Usyk involved in the camps? Because remember, she wasn't there because of the CBA stand that she took. Well, the non-CBA stand. So she would have only been in, what, one window?
Yeah, and she was there for Spain.
And then basically said no more.
Yeah.
She's publicly said that he was the reason, I believe.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. She said the mentality. I don't know that she named him specifically, but that vision. She said mentality, she wasn't willing to buy it.
He is delusional. That's the word she is. So there's no one else that she can refer to as in the he there.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is,
That's pretty brutal, eh?
She's taken a stand for.
Again.
Yeah, exactly. And then the first stand was around pay equality, and that got across the line. Second one has been around the coach being
poor.
I did actually hear that Chris Wood was given a lot of credit for that, the CBA thing, saying basically pushing that this should be the case, that men's and women's football should be paid the same. And that, while I applaud if that's true, I applaud him for doing it. But the fact that you had to have your leading all-white stand up for the women's game just smack so poorly that, you know, they're willing to listen to him, but yet willing to let Abby Ursi quit to make a point.
Mm. Captain of the NWSL winning team. I can't remember which one it was last season. 132.
Oh, is it?
132 caps.
Captain of the undefeated leading NWSL team.
Yeah.
Captain, the main centre back. They've conceded 11 goals in 12 games.
Yep.
She is one of the premier defenders in the world.
Yep.
And you're letting her walk away, first of all, because of the CBA, and then you've fixed it a year later and you've missed her for a year. Now you're going to let her walk away because you've got a gobshite for a coach.
Yep.
I mean, as a comparison, I'd definitely, at least on a par to Ryan Nelson.
Yep.
Certainly the results would be better than Ryan Nelson.
Yep.
Yep.
And a leader and a person who carries a lot of clout in the dressing room.
Yep. Yeah. Looked up to by all the young players. Everybody respects what she's done in the sport. It's just, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have someone of that quality have to give away playing for the country because of the situation they're currently in.
The mana that she'd carry just because of her playing style, but then quitting to go, okay, look, we need to change, I'm willing to let my career go, then to come, be able to come back in, you'd be like, you know, she'd be welcomed like a conquering hero, really.
Yeah.
And then for her to quit again, you can see why the girls would be gutted when they get out on the field.
Yeah.
Just be like having your heart ripped out.
And Katie Duncan said yesterday that more of them will go.
Yep.
She was almost certain of that. Mm. And Katie Duncan should know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Played with most of
them. Yeah, exactly. You know, she was their captain for a while.
Yeah. Actually, I just thought a redeeming feature, Paige Satchell. That's all.
She played well.
She was good. She was excellent. And the future of this team, and she's going to be absolutely hamstrung by the tactics that they put out there to display what she can actually put on the field.
And that's the other thing about, you know, to get rid of them, you kind of just want every player to just refuse to play for them. But you can't expect that from the younger players because they have careers on the line. And they're proving ground. They don't have another proving ground. They don't have a New Zealand National League that gets scouted by overseas people. They don't have the Phoenix. They don't have people who are going to, apart from some, you know, the PFA and the foundation who are trying to get them over to places. But they need the Ferns to showcase themselves, right? And I've only just thought of this now. If they need the Ferns to showcase themselves, they can't do that based on what happened at the stadium.
No.
So we're now affecting their career chances by allowing her to continue to coach.
Well, the horrendous thing about what you're saying there is that it relies on a player revolt to get rid of them, is essentially what you're saying, that we do not trust New Zealand football to act, and they should be the ones acting here. This should have happened already. We shouldn't be this many days down the track without even hearing from Andy Martin, let alone having decisive action from them. I think there's every chance we get something from him tomorrow. I mean, he's in Russia. That still doesn't explain 3 days, but I do think tomorrow we probably get something.
I think it gives you two. Being in Russia,
especially if you're having the OFC Congress on at the same time.
Correct, yeah. So I'm willing to give them some leeway there, but I do think this is a big enough issue and has reached a critical mass that they should have dealt with it by now. But let's assume we hear from them tomorrow. But it needs to be something decisive. This can't be a wishy-washy response from them like we've seen so many times in the past around this stuff. They are the ones who need to take action. We shouldn't be relying on all the players having to quit for them to realise, actually, we've got a problem here. It shouldn't take that much. They should know by now. Abby Ursi quitting should have been enough. You shouldn't be waiting for the biggest home game we've had in however long. We put out a shite show, other players start quitting, the media are on you, the fans are on you before you go, oh, well, maybe something's wrong. Like, that's insane that's what we think it's going to take.
Well, I think that Haraf's really, he's backed himself into a corner here because he's claimed the support of Andy Martin from New Zealand Football, all the federations as well.
On WhatsApp. That was fantastic.
You can't tell me that most of those guys.
No, I don't know. I forgot.
Yeah. I know what their emoticons look like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that basically that gives Andy Martin only two choices now if and when he makes a statement. He either has to back Haraf and say, yes, what he said was correct, or if he turns around and says, actually, no, this wasn't what we wanted, he's basically got to fire Haraf. Not just because of the performance, but he's gone out there and said that, no, I've got the full support of the CEO. And it's like, well, actually, no, you're
done. It's 0%. They fire.
Oh, I totally agree.
No way that's going to happen under any circumstances.
And unless Haraf's lying, in which case Andy can call about on it. If he says, that's not true, we didn't hire you to do that, and you don't have my backing, so your article claiming you do is bullshit. But I doubt that's true. I'm sure he does have the backing at least to some extent and does have this agreed as the vision at least to some extent.
I mean, this isn't – as I put it in that first opinion piece I did, this isn't the first – that I've heard of it.
No.
And it's not the first time, probably you guys may have heard of it, but they just pulled back that curtain on Sunday and showed us it all.
It's almost the best thing about the game being here was that we saw it firsthand, because Football Ferns games overseas at weird times don't get watched. I mean, a few people watch them, but it's hard to get the kind of groundswell we've got here with it being an overseas game at a weird time.
It's not just the Ferns either. Sorry, you go.
I was about to say, I thought that I have another redeeming feature, and that was that gorgeous metaphor. Pulling back the curtain on a steaming pile of excrement.
Yeah, I know. It's the only way I can think of
someone's how that gunning for the Football Media Awards right now.
Should I get into those, actually?
Yeah, on Friday.
Due Friday.
For last year, though, wasn't it?
So, yeah,
2017.
So you can't throw that in.
I've been going through photos last night. It's a tough job getting that down to five.
You would take hundreds of photos. Anyway, that's a digression. Yeah, as I say, I don't think they're going to fire him. I think he'll come out and support him and basically just say what he always says, Andy Martin, when he's under pressure, is that, well, that's your opinion.
Yep.
That's your opinion of it. That's everyone else's opinion. We're happy with him, and we're happy with what he's done, and he's done exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yep, and that's precisely why I've prepared this beautiful document I have in front of me, outlining the Martin era of New Zealand football. No, we're not going to talk about Hudson era. There, actually, I've entitled this document mistakenly the Hudson era, but that's fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but so I went out to a few people I know. I'm not going to name who they were, but a decent subset of fans and football people, and asked for both the good and bad things that we think have happened under Andy Martin. And it's pretty fair to say the list of good things is quite short.
Is it?
I mean, the CBA. Great. Definitely a good thing. I think we can all agree to that. I think the concerning thing there is how hard people had to fight for that. You know, it took players resigning and a hell of a long fight to get there, but at least eventually we got to the right place. So let's give them credit for that on some level.
He did look pained when he signed it, though.
Yep.
I've never seen a man more pained on a photo op than he was that day.
But this is the section where we're giving him credit for the things that. Yeah, sorry. We've got the National League televised now. Great. That's a big step up.
Again, I mean,
this may feature on the bad list. Let's hold that for later. We got rid of charging the kids for the under 17s and under 20s, which was great. That's another good thing. We've expanded the National League. Good. I don't know the detail on this, but someone said that that leadership award they got recently. Don't know what that is, but they did receive some sort of award. So I've
from Sport New Zealand.
So they got that. They've gone to a 2-round women's league. Great. They've named the Kate Sheppard Cup, which I think was, you know, a thing that needed to happen, whether we agree with the name or not, whatever. But they got there. And that's the list.
Oh, is that the list?
You're welcome. I didn't include you on my invite of things. So if you've got anything else you'd like to add in, go for your life.
Oh, the positive stuff.
Yeah, positives.
Positives. They're not bankrupt. That helps. They actually money. They have money. And they could have not had money if all of Anthony Hudson's promises. I mean, requests had been.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's
them,
fair.
A lot of them were, and they did probably.
They are in a good financial position.
Well,
They're solvent. Let's just say they're solvent and move forward.
Other positive? No other positive.
Okay, good. So we'll move on. We'll move on to the bad. I was hoping to rank these in terms of, you know, the timeline, but I didn't have a chance to do that at work this afternoon. But let's start with the Alex Jones saga. We lost the sponsorship to the National League twice. So ASB, who'd been a very long time sponsor, dropped away. We lost Sterling Sports. We obviously now have a new sponsor again, which is great. But they burnt two pretty big sponsorships there for a smaller one that essentially is one guy propping it up, and good on him, but not so good in terms of commercial relationships there. We've got the Hudson situation. We're not going to go into too much detail on that.
Oh, she just left that as the Hudson.
We've got the eligibility crisis that got us ruled out. We've got the TV rights for the National League, where, great, it's on television, but the amount we're asking the clubs to pay for this is ridiculous. It's a horrendous deal that means Sky have all of the control over it. They get paid a significant sum of money by the clubs to have it, and the clubs aren't even allowed to show their own replays. They're not allowed to stream their own games. They're not allowed to do anything. So even the games that aren't televised, the rights are still owned by Sky, so they can't be shown. It's an unbelievable situation. So great that we're on TV, terrible in terms of the deal that happened. We've had a lack of all whites home games. We've had Andy Martin's comments about the Peru supporters. We've had the time he had to go at you for doing that interview with the Peru newspapers or the Peru media. Yeah, he had a good go at you.
Did he? that was Anthony Hudson.
We've got...
God, what happened there? I don't remember that.
Yeah, Hudson was in on it, but Martin Comage as well, apparently. The Peru away ticket prices, that didn't affect many people, but it certainly was a bit of a farce. Figuera and Temple got sacked for the under-17s. He thought we'd draw an AFC team in the playoffs.
That's right.
Tried to organise better fan engagement around their restructure of the Congress. There's a post on the forums detailing this. They had a meeting with some people from Yellow Fever. Turned out the meeting was about how they could suppress fan views, and the Yellow Fever people walked out of the meeting. We've got Haraf, obviously, and we've got the Wikipedia edits saga and all of the New Zealand football time that's gone to that, allegedly.
The IPs were certainly coming out of
North Harbour Stadium.
And I've got one more I've forgotten to mention as well. Comet, the ongoing dramas with the rollout of that, which has been a nightmare.
As an IT professional, this gives me the proverbial shit because we are bending over backwards with GDPR and I'm seeing photos of people's passports.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Just fucking nuts. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. You look surprised by that, Liam. Did you not realise that's a thing?
Oh, I didn't realise that's a thing. That's a privacy breach.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's not even like...
It's been raised in New Zealand football several times as well. People talked about going to the media room and it was like, oh, no, we should probably let New Zealand football know so they can fix it. Months later, it's
still... access people's passports.
Yeah. And the people who have their passports, and there are, let's say, the higher profile football players, because not everyone has to scan an ID, for example.
Yeah. So people who would be more like prone to be targeted by...
And
match fixes. Going back to McNabb.
I think it's fair to say that the good list does have some good stuff on it, but they're nowhere near the weight of the absolute shambolic things that have occurred. I mean, any one of these things, the eligibility thing on its own is horrendous. The Alex Jones thing, where you've got one professional club to manage transfers for and you f*** it up. There's only a 23-man squad. Christ, is it that difficult?
Hey, it's also an anniversary weekend. I think you'll remember fondly.
There were extenuating circumstances around that. Yeah, there genuinely were. Genuinely were extenuating circumstances. But as rules are, there should have been other people around.
Absolutely.
100% there should have been.
The extenuating circumstances do not cancel their obligations as the national body. They just straight up don't. So
let's be honest, there's two transfer windows each year, right?
Yep.
You have to schedule someone on. If that person gets scheduled on and they sick, you should know about that. Or whatever.
Yep. Agree. Comet, shambles. And then all of the other good things they've done, you know, all the good stuff around the National League, fantastic, but it's just balanced out by doing really dumb things like the way they've dealt with the rights with Sky. It's very hard to find a genuine win in there where you go, yep, that was all on you guys, you did something good all by yourselves. Because even the biggest win, the CBA, I think you'd have to argue people fought pretty hard behind the scenes to get that across the line. I don't think New Zealand football came to and went, hey, we'd like to achieve pay parity and all this other cool stuff without a bunch of people basically holding them at gunpoint behind the scenes.
Yeah, they lost a lot of goodwill with players and I'd say the PFA as well.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, all they were really asking for this time around was the same access to travel.
Yep. Yeah,
they
basically
had
business class.
They had pay parity, they had equal rights, image rights, I should say, and they had equal prize money already. But equal prize money is not equal prize money.
It's equal proportional.
Yeah.
But that's fair enough. That's what it is.
Well, it is. Yeah, exactly. It is what it is. So, yeah, there's those negatives do outweigh the positives, right?
Yeah, like the negatives are you know, in any regular organisation, if that was a private sector company and your CEO had those sorts of fuck-ups, any one of those would potentially have got them out the door, let alone this many, and it's only been 4 years. Mm. You know, it's unbelievable. No, longer than 4 years, 6 years. Six, four.
Five, that's put a difference. I can't remember.
It's too long, some might say.
Yeah, well, it's just unbelievable to have that list of quite serious problems in that space of time. And then you factor in this new situation with Haraf and the fact that we all expect tomorrow he's going to come out and back him. If he sacks him, he'll save some face here. It still won't be... It won't be that redeeming, but it might buy him a little longer. If he comes out tomorrow as we expect and backs him and says, this is what we wanted out of it, you know, this is what we've asked him to do and your opinion's wrong on this... it's surely another nail in the coffin here. Like, surely we're done with this, that we can't have that level of ineptitude and lack of vision leading the sport anymore.
I don't think that he can save face by sacking him. I think the only thing, because as soon as he sacks him, he's basically said, we've made a horrible, horrible mistake.
Yeah.
The only thing he can really do is go, okay, we're going to put him back into director of football, or, you know,
you can't
push him, further back and put a new coach in, or just basically just reduce his responsibilities to the point where he buggers off. Mm. That's the only way he can get out of this without a full-scale revolt.
Well, it's the problem with him having these dual roles is I don't think you can take him out of Football Fern's role and go, oh, but you're still the technical director after this. He can't keep just half of that. Like, the scale back has to be a pretty heavy demotion somehow.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that could possibly look like.
You've got to, after all these failures, you do have to look at the board as well now.
Yep.
And I think I've written, but there's been change there.
Yep, there has.
Thankfully. Because they've just been a rubber stamping, tick box ticking bunch of people, and you know, by all accounts, very nice people.
Hmm.
But you are there to keep the chief executive and the rest of the organisation and hold them to account.
Yep.
That's the function of a board, is to go in there and make sure the correct questions are asked, and they clearly haven't been around a lot of things for quite a long time.
No, exactly. Whether
you have a full scale clear out of the whole organisation is another thing, which, you know, some people have suggested, but I don't know if you can go down that path. But, I mean, this change is going to keep happening as well. Like, at that board level, that's not the first year it's going to happen.
No, absolutely.
The federations are finally getting together and finally going, actually, you know, we're the key stakeholders in this game. We pay New Zealand football. They don't pay us. It's not like rugby and cricket.
No.
But the money doesn't come down. The money goes up. And then they f*** around with it and do stupid shit with it. So the people who are giving them the money are finally going, actually, we're tired of you doing stupid stuff with our money. We're going to put some people in there who actually – and it's not even – is it about just sacking everyone? No, it's about going in there and asking questions, at least. At least that's the least of your job, is to just ask questions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that change is inevitable at this point, but the longer it carries on, let's say it takes two more years under this regime, that could be killing us for 10 years. I mean, it could put the game in serious strife. So, yeah.
Right. Well, how about we transition to a bit of joy in the game?
Is there any of that left?
There's a tournament coming up. Cam, you
something to be
know
kind
about,
of, about the World Cup? Yeah, I'm a little bit excited about it, to be fair.
I legitimately, when you said tournament, was thinking, what tournament? I was like, the Chatham Cup? What?
On a level of 1 to Cam, you're a full Cam?
Oh, full Cam, yes.
Full Cam.
100% full Cam. Couldn't be more excited about Friday morning.
Just as a background, I've watched how many World Cups with you now?
2002 was the first.
Yeah.
2006, I was away.
Yeah.
2010 and 2014. Plus the Euros in there as well, and the Copa Americas.
And let me tell you, when you hear a high-pitched squeeing noise, this is Cam. It is quite unbelievable. Even when England are playing and getting thumped. But
I'm not backing England in this World Cup. I'm backing Peru.
I actually think they've got a better chance than they ever had.
No, 2002, they had a really good team, and they could have won that tournament, but Brazil were better. Simple as that.
Okay. So how about we just seeing as we've got a nice long 1 hour and 6 minutes already.
And we want to give Patrick something to edit.
How about we stick to some of the basics? Who do we think is going to win? Let's even look to semi-finalists, because I think that should really sort the men from the boys. Golden boots, dark horses.
Oh, you're really stitching me up here. I'm doing all my tipping tonight. I haven't looked at this yet.
Oh, well, you're going to get some tips here. Let's go with the pro first, Liam.
Well, I've come out today and tipped Nigeria to win
the whole thing. Yeah, I saw that.
What?
Oh, my God.
What?
On the record.
Just because of their strip.
No, just because they're my second favourite team ever since the day when Kanu was playing for Arsenal, and I loved Kanu. Kanu was my idol.
I thought this was a fantastic thing. I read the story today, and I was like, this is brilliant. Because he comes – like, it's interesting. You remember it.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit funny,
but
if it comes off or even comes close, he looks like a bloody genius.
If
they make a semi-final, he looks like a genius, even though he's still wrong.
Exactly.
They're not getting out of the group.
There were 3 points I was trying to make. One was that tipping is futile, okay? And all the – because the other tips have gone Germany, Germany, France, France, Brazil, Brazil, something like that, okay? Second point is I think an African team has got a really good shot of winning. I genuinely believe that.
Just not that African team.
What? Alex Iwobi, the new Kanu.
I rest my case. you're literally making my point
know,
for me.
I know. It was. Yeah, it was a little bit of fun. It was so, a little bit.
How about we call Nigeria your dark horse?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll switch them to my dark horse for the purposes of this exercise, and I'll say that I think Germany are going to win because I always back Germany, and I have backed them again on the odds. And yeah. So what else?
Dark horse
is going to be Nigeria. And John Obi Mikel for Golden Ball, but perhaps Golden Boot. Wow. I think Gabriel Jesus from Brazil, because I think they'll go quite far, and I think he'll be fighting Neymar for goals, obviously. But I think he'll.
That's going to happen in every team, though. Every team is going to.
Every team, they've got two good.
Who have you got in your semis? Then you've probably got Germany and Brazil.
Yep,
that's opposite sides of the draw because they both top their group.
Yep,
and
can France make it out of that?
Yep. So the likely semifinals, if they top their group as they should, would be France, Brazil on one side, and Germany would be on the opposite side against likely either Argentina or Spain.
Well, I've tipped Argentina to go out of the group stage, so I don't think they're going to make it.
Fair enough.
And Spain, I think, are going to go quite good. My like dark horse also to get out of the group stage is Iran, even though they're in Spain and Portugal's group.
Wow, that is a big call.
I'll put that out there. I don't know. I love a fairy tale. I just want to see.
And there always is one. There's always a fairy tale.
If they don't.
Yeah.
There's that too as well.
It's an interesting call on Argentina, though, because you're obviously going to pick Croatia and
Nigeria.
Yeah, I was going to say it has to be Nigeria.
Or Iceland. Croatia, Iceland, and Nigeria are going to cause.
The problem with Iceland, they're missing Sigurdsson in midfield. They're missing the big fella up front.
Sigurdsson.
Yeah, so I think he's selected in the squad, but he's gone and injured. So there's every chance he's not going to play. So there's no. I think they will struggle at this tournament. I think future tournaments, yes, definitely, but this particular tournament, I think there'll be a problem. Okay. So for me, Croatia, definitely a great shot at going out. Mm. But I think Argentina topped that group purely on the attack that they've got, and that's it.
Their defence is a shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Mascherano's 34, really so, and he was the one that was holding them together last time. Yeah. So, Cam.
Yeah, so I am. Yeah, so for me, France to win the tournament. I can't go past that squad. I think they're a fantastic squad. But the semi-finalists for me will be Brazil, France, Germany, and probably Argentina. But Argentina only on their attack, so their defence is a shit show. Yeah. And if they come against someone like Spain.
Yeah, I was about to say Spain, the destruction they got at the hands of Spain.
Yeah, so the likelihood is Spain play Argentina in the quarterfinals as well. That's where they would meet. So, yeah, it's going to be quite an interesting call, that one. Dark horse, though, I think someone like Croatia could be a dark horse. They've got a fantastic squad. Mandzukic up front. Modric in midfield. They've got
Rakitic.
They've got a really, really quality side. Playing some good quality football. You struggled
four goals in qualifying.
Exactly. Yeah. You struggle to go past over someone like Belgium as well because the quality that they've got on their team. But
don't start me, mate. Who's the coach? Martinez.
That's the problem. They're a shit coach,
and they've never performed in an international tournament.
That is not true. Belgium finished fourth in 1986. So they can't say they've never performed in a national tournament.
Well, these players have been alive.
Anyway, I would love to see someone like you talk about an African nation. I think of all the African nations, the strongest one is Egypt, and they've got the most progressible group. So they're in with Uruguay, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. Russia is old and slow. They've got
there
is that. They've got some. The Perizutski brothers, all three of them, totaling 110 in age in their starting lineup, apparently. And so, honestly, I think if you get someone like Salah, who's back and playing, running against them, he could have a field day.
Against Russia, they're just not going to break his leg. They're just going to go, fuck it, there's three brothers here. Two of us will keep playing. The other
sweep
one will
the
just...
leg. Sweep the leg. Or sweep the shoulder, either way.
Sweep the head clean off the shoulder.
You don't jump.
I think Egypt will be a great shout for a dark horse as well.
Golden Boot.
Griezmann. Again, we talk about, you say Gabriel Jesus is going to be getting goals taken off him by Neymar. Mm. Griezmann will get them taken off him by Kylian Mbappe, who's also a good shout for our Golden Boot. If you look at someone like Harry Kane. If England get out of the group, they're going to need someone to score goals, and he's the only one really that's capable in their squad. They could get out of the group. Generally, the Golden Boot only needs about 6 goals on average. 6 goals is a fairly good total for winning Golden Boot, and I can definitely see him getting that in 4 games. He also scores in groups, tends to score I think he's got 5 hat-tricks or something like that, so he does score goals in groups quite often, so he could be a good shout for it as well.
You're almost talking me around about an England player.
Oh, I'm not going to back him at all. I'm backing Griezmann.
Well, but
I think Griezmann
gets
it
as well, right?
Panama and Tunisia.
Yeah, so he could get a hat-trick against Panama.
He easily could. Mm. And another one against Tunisia, and then he's in with a shout. Mm. So,
Dave, come on, mate.
Oh, see, the annoying thing is I haven't done my iterations of who's going to be in semis, so I'm gonna skip picking those. But I think Germany very likely to take it out again. For my dark horse,
just saying, no team has backed up winning the World Cup since 1962 when Brazil did it. So they'll be breaking a trend. Even getting into back-to-back finals, it's more common quite a lot. Germany's done 3 in a row and Brazil's done 3 in a row really recently, but it's just not common to win.
Yeah, the modern game's different. So, I mean, the historical stuff doesn't necessarily matter. The best team should win it anyway. And I think they're a good shout. I think the semis sound like they work out pretty interesting. So I think semis might well be where this essentially gets decided. So that could be interesting in itself. For my dark horse, though, I'm going to go with Peru. I don't necessarily think they're a dark horse to win the whole thing, but I do think they are very likely to exceed expectations. I think them getting out of their group and doing quite well wouldn't be that unlikely. I think they're going to go above and beyond what they're expected to.
See, I look at Peru and think they're going to go in either direction.
They're either going to explode
under the pressure, or they're going to step up and have an amazing performance.
And see, I've adopted them as my team for the tournament as well, purely because they're playing against Australia.
I'll definitely be cheering for Peru.
I'll be cheering for France and Denmark also in that group when they play Australia.
Have you got a...
No, I'm not going Golden Boot, not without looking at who, because I agree. I think it's very likely that might occur in pool play. I think someone will have a solid lead there, and it actually might not be the teams who win the whole thing.
It's not uncomfortable. Someone has won a Golden Boot, been knocked out in the group stage. Yep. Oleg Salenko for Russia in 1994 got 5 goals in a game.
His knowledge of World Cups is just encyclopedic. He doesn't know anything about anything else in the world, but World Cups.
I just love World Cups. Love World Cup.
Okay, well, seeing as you're a glove man, how about a Golden Glove?
Nah. Again, not. Also, I've looked at who's playing who in the pools, because I really haven't looked at it. I leave it to the last second.
And that's hard too, because Golden Glove doesn't necessarily mean you've got the most clean sheets, does it?
No.
You are the best keeper. It's hard to judge. You could have someone like De Gea, who is by far and away, I think, the best goalkeeper in the world, even though he plays for the worst club.
Man, there's going to be some kazoos in this for Patrick, isn't there?
He's going to have a great time, isn't he? But he could be a shoo-in for it, but there's every possibility that Spain will go out in the group.
Oh, God forbid I've got to put my German jumper on again just to make a point. Neuer, he's back, baby.
Yes, but he hasn't played all season.
It's fine. He'll be nice and rested for playing 2 positions, sweeper and kicker.
Dude, no. I cannot see Neuer doing it this time around, and just because he's had a season off.
I saw the highlights of that game, first warm-up game that he came back for, and he was the best player on the field for Germany, to be honest. I wish I could say that I think Germany's going to win. I really do hope that they do.
As the German jumper that you wore tonight suggests.
Yeah. Who are you picking, though? You've got to put your stamp on something.
The problem is I can't...
And by stamp, I mean the kiss of death on Germany.
Yeah, I know. The problem is I can't really see...
I just want him to say it so that I can make him listen back to it later.
I can't really see many of the other teams beating them. I think Brazil, they're too disjointed. France... The longer they go in the tournament, the more likely they are to implode.
They do tend to have that.
They've got that in them. I just can't see them winning away from home.
It's happened more than once, which is an amazing part as well.
It's brilliant. Spain, they're not as good as they were, and I don't know that they're going to be there. So I'm going to say Germany to win, but the semis are definitely going to be Spain, Germany, France, and Brazil. Golden Boot, I would love to say Timo Werner, but I can't even see if he plays.
You're going to start with Marco Reus, and you'll probably play with Thomas Müller as well, and there's a lot of goals in there.
It'll be Timo Werner starting.
Oh, I disagree. We'll find out next week.
No, you're wrong. It'll be Timo Werner starting. Reus, if he plays anywhere, he'll be playing right, trust me, or 10. He won't be playing striking. I'm going to go out there and say Gomez, because he has a horrible talent for coming on and just getting 2 touches and scoring with one of them.
Mario Gomez.
Mario Gomez.
I don't even think he's going to get much game time, mate. I think he's going to be the third in line of your strikers.
No,
that's not including Thomas Müller.
No, he's the number two. Trust me. He's the number two.
How is he still there?
He came back from Lazio. Was it Lazio? And had a really good season there. Came back to Germany and he's like the second or third leading scorer.
That's a bolter. That is a bolter pick, that one.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
But he will get a lot of game time with Timo Werner.
Well, maybe Timo Werner breaks his leg as well. He has to play.
Well, I think Werner's not going to get. He's not going to get more.
That's the thing. Like, you can name a golden boot person, and they can just break their leg in the first game.
Absolutely.
You're screwed. Dark horse.
I think someone like Egypt, because no one's going to get a good read on them. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows Salah's good, but he's not a guy that you can think out. You've either got to chop him, break his leg. No one knows anything about
it. Does he play well for Egypt? I've never seen him play for Egypt. Does he?
The talismanic player, basically.
Yeah.
So Egypt have a solid team, good team, because you have to have a team to make it far. Yeah. With that one talismanic player, a bit like Messi for Argentina, or actually, no better example, Ronaldo at Portugal, who have a good team, very good team, with that one talismanic kind of guy.
Cool.
The way Salah plays, it's like it doesn't matter.
It's beautiful to watch. It
just doesn't matter. Like, you get him the ball and he's just going to do it.
I think there's every chance he just gets kicked out of this tournament, though. I think people know that targeting him is a way to win those games. Yep. So I think every team that play him in the group stage are just going to kick the shit out of him.
The thing was, we've also got VAR. So you go in late, you're going to get picked up.
Senegal have the same problem because they've got Sadio Mane. They'll do exactly the same scenario, solid team, one-star player, and they'll just kick him out of the game. This is why I wouldn't pick them. And I got Senegal in the office sweepstake, which I'm running, which is even worse. So, yeah, oh well.
So, one last question. How do we think the VAR is going to be going in the World Cup?
Oh, it's going to be horrendous. Yeah. It's going to be great, though.
Patrick Aldred is basically killing the final.
Yes.
And he called that.
I think by the final, they will have sorted themselves out to some extent. They'll either just let the game run and go, we're not letting this mess up.
It'll be there, but it would have been revoked.
Yeah. Or
Well, do you know who's involved in that? Pierluigi Chiellini.
Chiellini, really?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Greatest referee ever.
Yeah.
He's apparently involved in the VAR. I don't know if he's sitting in the box.
Although then you might get a Sean Evans situation. Comparing them to is a horrendous thing.
Yeah, I'm like, where are you going with this?
Leader and Sean Evans, mate, come on.
You might get a Sean Evans coming in over the top to an inexperienced referee and going, mate, you need to send that guy off.
Yeah, maybe.
Although, who's an experienced referee in a FIFA World Cup? That's not really going to happen, is it?
I could give you an Australian name.
I could give you a New Zealand name from this time.
Yeah, that's true. You've got him in your ear, and he's saying that's a red card, and you're going to go, actually, I mean, sure, he's probably right.
Yeah, but the thing is, he probably is right.
Yeah.
Kalina just sitting in a box, not having to run around after people,
and
I'm thinking.
To be fair, Dave's made this point before. There's a difference between being a good video ref and being a good on-field ref.
Yeah, you don't.
Exactly. Just because you're great on the field doesn't mean you're going to do anything well in the box. So he might be the greatest referee. He isn't necessarily going to be the greatest in the box.
No. And you can still be a specialist VAR and still be shit at it like George Ayew in rugby.
Absolutely.
Oh, nice reference on a football pod. These two guys are like, what?
No, I know who he's talking about. But no, so back to the VAR question. I think we're going to see some horror shows, but it'll be in the group stage, and I think it'll get ironed out either in terms of actually fixing it so it works, or on the quiet, they'll just essentially not be using it.
I don't think they can, because I think then you'll get that massive incident in the final, and they're going, VAR, like the FIBA do, and if they don't crack into it, when they definitely should.
This is the thing, though. There'll still be a guy in the box. It'll all still be, in theory, working, but I think they'll be going, do not intervene unless it is dead set. We need stonewall penalties. Yeah. We need someone punching the referee. You know, amazing. Yeah. Then you can step in. But if it's even close to marginal, you're sitting there and you're touching nothing.
It should be that way anyway.
It should be.
It should only be atrocities which are overturned.
I totally agree.
Straight from the VAR to the Hague.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm pretty excited. I've got 3 a.m. alarms are set.
Full on cam.
Yeah, man. Generally most World Cups I watch.
Well, you were tweeting today about how it's only one more day to go, and people were calling you out, being like, No, that's not true.
There's only one more day to go. One more sleep, and then it's World Cup time.
It's honestly like Christmas and Santa with Cam.
It is. There's nothing like the anticipation of a World Cup Eve.
Don't think any of the games will be fixed.
I missed a positive. The fact that all this Haraf stuff has brought me down so much, it shows how bad that situation actually was, because these guys will say I'm the little fucking happy stick around here.
I feel like on that topic, I should let the listeners know that Cam has once again bought his nighttime sunglasses in the middle of winter. It hasn't been sunny in like a week.
New glasses too. Brand new glasses.
This is the level of optimism Cam has, is that night in winter, when we haven't seen sunshine in days, he's still got his sunnies on his head.
You are welcome.
I've only seen Cam down on football on one occasion in the more than a decade.
17 years we've known each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was last Phoenix season, and now he's back. Me, it's annoying. Should we wrap it up, gents?
Yes.
Yep.
That was so smooth. It was beautiful.
That is Patrick-esque levels of awkward.
Well, at least I'm
you're like, you were like, you. Shall we wrap it up? And then waited for someone else to wrap it up. And then you're like, oh, wait, it's me.
I did tell you I didn't prepare for this at all.
That was great.
Last time. So goodbye for me, and goodbye from the three of you guys.
You're not going to thank Liam for turning up?
No.
Oh, no. Happy to be here.
Thanks for ruining it.
You're welcome. I ruined it for Patrick as well.